This is the Quality News Network. Two more U.S. Marines have reportedly been killed in Iraq in fighting west of Baghdad, raising to 53 the number of American forces who have died in December, which is becoming one of the deadliest months of the war. The Army Chief of Staff is proposing an increase in the size of the Army and greater flexibility in the use of Army reserves. Iranians are going to the polls today to elect local councils. President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad is not on the ballot, but today's election is seen as a referendum on his presidency. A huge rally in Gaza today. Tens of thousands of Hamas turning out to support Palestinian Prime Minister Ismail Haniyeh following an assassination attempt on his convoy as he was returning from a two-week trip abroad to raise money to help the Palestinian government. Dozens were wounded in the clash, including one of Haniyeh's sons. Hamas blames Fatah for the attack. Meanwhile, the $35 million in cash he was bringing back to Gaza was taken from him by Israeli border guards at the Rafah International crossing with Egypt. Israel, which was backed by the U.S. in that decision, has not revealed what's become of that money. Optimistic news from Washington, D.C., where South Dakota Senator Tim Johnson is recovering without complications from emergency surgery Wednesday night after suffering a brain hemorrhage. He remains in critical condition. A delegation of 10 U.S. lawmakers who favor the easing of sanctions against Cuba arrives in Havana today for a three-day visit. Meanwhile, U.S. Intelligence Chief John Negroponte is telling the Washington Post that everything he's seen indicates that Cuban President Fidel Castro is dying. Blizzard conditions are continuing to hamper rescue efforts on Oregon's Mount Hood for three hikers missing since Sunday, and the weather is getting worse. A major winter storm is battering both Washington and Oregon, where thousands are without power. Streets are flooded. Extremely high winds have knocked down trees and forced the closure of floating bridges and several highways. A ceremony today at the White House where President Bush awarded Medals of Freedom, the nation's highest civilian honor, to 10 Americans, including former Transportation Secretary Norm Mineta, musician B.B. King, Xavier University President Dr. Norman Francis, political commentator William Sapphire, and historian David McCullough. New Jersey's legislature has approved same-sex unions, giving those couples the same rights and privileges as are available under state law to married people. Once signed into law, New Jersey joins Connecticut and Vermont, which also recognize civil unions, and California, which allows domestic partnerships. Massachusetts remains the only state to legalize gay marriage. Ahmet Erdogan, the founder of Atlantic Records and the man who either discovered, produced, or popularized such recording legends as Ray Charles, Aretha Franklin, and the Rolling Stones, has died at the age of 83. You're listening to the Quality News Network, 2.5 past the hour, science and business coming up.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, a conversation with America designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distance guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 a.m. in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
Researchers report that U.S. breast cancer rates dropped 7% in 2003. That's 14,000 fewer cases, something being attributed to the fact that millions of women quit taking menopause hormones that year following a federal study that found a link between the two. Lehman Brothers and Bear Stearns are both reporting record earnings. Lehman profits up $4 billion. That's 23%. Bear Stearns profits up 40% to $2.1 billion. And the head of Morgan Stanley Investment Bank getting a Christmas bonus of $40 million in stock and options. And the Wall Street Journal says the head of Goldman Sachs will probably be getting one worth $50 million. Consumer inflation unchanged in November following two consecutive months of 0.5% declines. Home Depot is buying back $3 billion in stock with the proceeds from its recent $5 billion debt offering. First, there was a warning. Now there is a recall. Nintendo announcing it will replace 3.2 million wrist straps on its Wii computer game system after numerous complaints that the wand-like hand controllers were flying out of the hands of energetic players. Gold is trading at $627.10 an ounce this hour, down nearly $4. Silver is down 20 cents at $13.75. And light sweet crude up 12 cents a barrel, trading at $62.63. On Wall Street, Dow is again in record territory, up 62 points. 12,478. NASDAQ up 12 at 2465, and the S&P 500 is up 18 points this hour at 1430. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter. It's now 5 past the hour.
from Chicago, the city with many names, it's the Cup of Joe Radio Show. 2 hours of truth and fury representing the fighting spirit of the American worker. And now, through the miracle of screaming audio, here's the guy your bosses hate, the Windy City's biggest windbag, your host, Joe Vecchio.
All right. Thank you, Bob. It's good to be here at the in Chicago, in lovely, wonderful Chicago. The temperature's actually warmed up a bit. All the snow that fell on us last Friday has now officially melted away or been rained away. There's a couple little drops here and there, but it's all pretty much gone. And today looks like it's really, really nice day. How's everybody out there? We have a guest later on in the show in a few minutes, Jim Yancey, who is the head of the Jackson County, Mississippi Community Services Coalition. And we're going to be talking about the government, or the Republican government's disastrous response to a disaster, and see how they deal with that. Before I get into that, and I want to talk about this, because I saw this in the paper the other day, and this is the type of thing where people always accuse me of being too negative, but I got to get into this. There was a story in the Chicago's Red Eye, which is like a free daily newspaper put out by the Chicago Tribune. And the front page story was about Will Smith, who's starring in a new movie called Pursuit of Happiness. Happiness spelled with a Y, intentionally. And it's the kind of sort of true story of a gentleman named Chris Gardner. Chris Gardner is a guy who 24 years ago was homeless and with a young son in San Francisco. And he worked his way up to become a multimillionaire by owning his own brokerage firm. And I want to say right off the bat that, you know, I think that's wonderful. I think it's great. But I have a lot of problems with the way the story is presented and with the attitude of the story. And a few things I want to point out. First of all, they say only in America can a homeless man become a multimillionaire. Okay? That's fine. You know, it's all well and good. But what does it say about America that such an obviously exceptional person became homeless in the first place? And this was a man, you know, he was homeless, but he was college educated because he was looking for work in a brokerage firm. And you don't walk into a brokerage firm to be a sales broker without a college education, ladies and gentlemen. Okay. And, of course, he was homeless in 1982, which, if my math is correct, was 24 years from 2006. Which was before the Reagan Revolution, or before a bunch of it really got started in a big way, and before they were dumping homeless people or people out of mental hospitals, okay? And I look at this and I think, okay, if this guy could become a millionaire after having gone through everything that he went through, what does it say about the rest of us? Now, Mr. Gardner makes a lot of money now. In fact, I don't think he even does anything in his firm anymore. He seems to just go out and give speeches and makes a lot of money to do that. What does it say about the people who go see his speeches? Why aren't they millionaires? They certainly had a lot more advantages than he had. I mean, do people think they're going to become millionaires just by listening to him speak? And what really angers me about the story is not the focus of, you know, not the focus of how this man was focused in his search to better his life and to make a better life for his son, which is an admirable thing. But the focus is always on the money. Oh, he became a millionaire. He bought a Ferrari from Michael Jordan. He's got a 12-foot desk made from the wing of a jet airliner. Yeah, those are the really important things about being rich, right? As if just having $1 million or being a multimillionaire was something that was worthy of praise in and of itself. I mean, if he had become a millionaire pimp, or a cocaine dealer, would that make him worthy of praise? You know, some of these drug lords out in Colombia, they came from even lower standings. And they were just as homeless. And now some of them, hey, they run a multi-million-dollar drug company. Yeah, they kill thousands of people, you know, but they got $1 million. They got a fur sink, an electric dog polisher, a gasoline-powered turtleneck sweater. Yeah, that's what's really important. And Let me ask you this. The brokerage firm that he started to work for, did that ever drive someone into bankruptcy? Did it ever cause someone else to be homeless? And I'm sure he has, but let me just ask the question for the sake of asking. Has he done anything to help other homeless people? Or has he turned around and pulled the ladder up behind him? Is he helping politicians that's going to make it more difficult for a homeless person to do what he did? And as much as he might like to say he did it all himself, and I'm not saying that, you know, he isn't an exceptional person, because he obviously is. But the truth of the matter is that he didn't do it out by himself. Someone had to recognize his talent at some point in his career to at least get his foot in the door. I mean, like I said, he was obviously a college-educated person. He could afford to have gone to school somehow, whether it was through a scholarship or maybe his family paid for it. Maybe he worked for a while. I don't know. But somehow he got a college education. And what really angers me is, to me, when I see a story like this, it just gives a white man an excuse to not give any money to a homeless brother on the street. Now they can just start refusing to help any other homeless person. You know, well, you know, if Chris Gardner could become a lawyer in a brokerage firm and buy a Ferrari for Michael Jordan, then so can you. So I'm not going to give you any money because it's not going to do you any good. You know, Neil Bortz, the little scumbag out in Atlanta, he loves to say, I mean, he does this every year. He chuckles about whenever he hears about a homeless person freezing to death in the winter. And granted, Atlanta winters are not exactly harsh, but still. He loves to talk about that. Oh, two homeless guys died. Oh, more for the gene pool. And if he and his pals had his way, Mr. Gardner would have been dead long ago. So you got to the point where you're homeless, where you're obviously a useless eater. And you have no right to live. If they give him the chance, they there are people out there right now who go out and just put a gun to the head of every homeless person in the world. There are people out in this country who would love to sweep the streets of all the homeless people. Now, Mr. Gardner fortunately didn't have any problems like alcoholism or drug use and stuff like that. And again, this is not something that's against Mr. Gardner or what he's accomplished. This is the way the story is being told, and this is how the right wing, I see it, is gonna view it. Well, you see, that guy made it. So anyway, it's like, well, this guy can quit smoking, so anybody can quit smoking. I wonder how many Chris Gardners there are out there who we've lost because the right wing in particular and a few limousine liberals just wish the homeless would kind of disappear. How many? And I wonder how many Chris Gardners are living down in Mississippi. How many potential success stories got wiped out because the government is run by a bunch of people who believe in pulling the ladder up on everybody? How many? Now, maybe, you know, if the Red Eye would have made, you know, some sort of reference to these sort of things, you know, at least, you know, temper their story a little bit and just tell you, oh, look, he's got a gasoline powered turtleneck sweater. Oh, look at all the groovy stuff he's got. Isn't he an impressive person? Then maybe things might be a little better in this country. Maybe. Just maybe. Anyway, you know what? We've got our guest coming up, hopefully. He'll be here soon. And in the meantime, let's take a little break. Don't call in just yet so that our guests can get on. Don't call in just yet. The number is 1-877-443-2366, just for information. Let's take a Beatles break, and with luck, we'll be back with Mr. James Yancey.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
Head on Radio with Bob Kincaid.
When? Somebody tell me when the United States of America went from a can-do country to a can't-do country. Was can-do washed away in the fetid floods of Katrina? Was can-do killed in the stinking sands of Iraq? Did can-do get buried in the dank and gassy hole of Sago number one? Where did the Bush administration go when they took can-do out and killed it? What happened to a nation that never said we can't? What happened to that nation that knew that the only thing it had to fear was fear itself?
Well, Mr. Kincaid, we've replaced that slogan. Now all we have is fear.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on the Head On Radio Network. Do you know what you want?
This is the story about a group of kids who volunteered.
We fix stuff. Did some art projects with the kids.
Clean up the park.
We worked in the woods.
I just wanted to do something.
We fixed up this house.
Did something for the planet.
Hey, that was all I needed. And you know what? It was great.
It was a blast.
At first, they didn't know each other.
I didn't know anyone.
Well, that didn't last long.
This guy is really funny.
Me?
These are my new friends. These are really good new friends.
Are you into it?
Are You Into It is a volunteer program for kids like you who care. If you want to make a difference in your community and make friends, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH or check out our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
This definitely made a difference.
I feel like I can do everything now.
Yeah.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Okay, we're back here in the Cup of Joe radio show. As many of you know, last year, the city of New Orleans and a great swath of the Mississippi Gulf Coast was destroyed by Hurricane Katrina, which, despite what the right wing may want to tell you, was no fault of their own. When you're in the path of something as devastating as a hurricane and as nasty a hurricane as Katrina was, there's really not a whole heck of a lot you can do. And if you're someone like myself, living paycheck to paycheck, and you find your home and your job and everything about your life suddenly destroyed, let's just say life isn't exactly a bunch of roses. And it's a testimony, if I can use that word, to the incompetence, to the lack of compassion, to the just utter greed of the people who are running this country, that here, so many months later, people are still suffering. And we all try to do everything we can, but this person in particular is doing a lot more than most, and I really appreciate all of its efforts. Let's just bring him on here. His name is Jim Yancey, and he is the executive director of the Jackson County Community Service Coalition in Mississippi. Hi, Mr. Yancey. How are you?
Hey, Joe. Doing well.
Good, good. Glad to have you on the show.
Thanks for inviting me.
Well, you know, my good friend Sarge, who calls in every day, tells me about all the fantastic work you're doing down there and how you wish that the government would help you out a little more, or at least give you the money that they promise you, right? Have you been promised a lot of money and not gotten it?
Well, I would say this, is that the problem with the f- funds coming down from the government is it's kind of like a spigot, a water tap in a water source, and there's so much red tape, and there's some folks that qualify and some folks that don't qualify, and by the time you go through the process, instead of having a regular flow of water, what you've got are just drops coming out. And we're in the 16th month of this mess, and what we've got happening on the Gulf Coast is we got water trickling out when we really need it pouring out, because just in our county, in Jackson County, it's about 133,000 people live here. We had 23,250 homes completely destroyed.
And that, good Lord.
That's 34% of all the homes in Mississippi that were destroyed by Katrina. So, and at present, FEMA came in and did an estimate of unmet needs recently just in our county, and they came up with a total of just under 6,000 unmet needs that are not registered in Jackson County, and they figured at a cost of about $72 million. So it's an unbelievable, when you start looking at figures like that, that's just unbelievable.
And you know, it really strikes me, and again, I hate to keep dragging politics into it, but that's, isn't that a fairly red part of the country? I mean, don't these people generally vote Republican fairly strongly?
Yeah, I think it's probably about 75% Republican down here on the Mississippi Gulf Coast. I think it is.
And do you think they feel let down by the government's reaction to all this?
Well, I just think it's a very frustrating process because, on the one hand, we're talking about these billions and billions of dollars being poured into Mississippi and Louisiana. And you come down here and look in the three coastal counties, and, yeah, there's been some progress. We've had some things rebuilt. We've had some roads repaired. We're working on bridges, and we've had some businesses put back in place. But the problem is we are still got folks that are still living in FEMA trailers, not back in their homes. And another problem is, from my perspective, from being on the ground, is that we've got organizations down here that are wanting to tell us that it's going to take 5 to 7 years to rebuild. And we don't have 5 to 7 years to rebuild. We got to get the saying we have down here, Joe, is we got to get the hay out of the barn down on the ground so the cows can eat it. And the hay is the money down here on the ground because, as you know, in Mississippi, the wind blows. Like in California, the earth shakes. So it's going to blow again maybe next year or the year after. And we need these folks back in their homes now in the next 6 to 12 months as quickly as possible. We don't need some long-term recovery process the next 5 years, because you got senior citizens right now that lose hope that don't have that kind of time.
I just wish I knew what to say. It's kind of ridiculous. I mean, and you know, Hurricane Katrina could be just the first of many large hurricanes that slam into that region, because the hurricanes have apparently been getting nastier and nastier. It wasn't so bad this year, fortunately, but
yeah,
you never know for the future.
Now, we were very fortunate this year. Of course, they're forecasting, you know, I mean, just again, where we live on the Gulf Coast, we could get hit, you know, Louisiana could get hit again, Alabama. Obviously, Florida's a place that seems to get hit the most. But our task right now is to get two things, is to rebuild homes and to restore people's lives. And part of restoring people's lives is giving them hope. And one of the ways that you give them hope is you go out and talk with them and you help them rebuild their homes.
Well, let me ask an obvious question. Where's all this money going?
Good question.
I mean, is it getting siphoned off by, because, you know, when I talk to Sarge about this, Sarge says that people down there are almost ready to start rioting. There's a very angry mood out there, and he says that the casinos are being built, but not the hospitals. And I have no doubt that they're sending a lot of money down there, but obviously people are skimming a lot off the top. Do you have, you know, are you allowed to even talk about where you think the money is going?
Well, I mean, you're talking to a guy that's kind of been in a tunnel down here. I don't read the news that much. It's because my office is about 2 miles from the Gulf Coast, and we have been working trying to help people so much that we're not caught up with a lot of what's going on. But I'll give you one example I do know of. There's the company that was hired to do the debris removal for Mississippi was a company called Ashbrit. And I forgot what they were paid. I think it was over $400, maybe $500 million. And our board of supervisors in Jackson County fired them because they were so slow at picking up debris that our board of supervisors ended up getting our own county to start picking up debris. And the process was just moving way too slow for them. And when the county started doing it, it picked it up quite a bit. So it was a government contract. In my understanding, it's a number of government contracts that's gone awry. The problem with getting the government involved, particularly in the recovery process, is that, again, all the red tape that's involved. What you need to do, from my perspective, is hook up with the local organizations that live here that know how to respond to these kind of critical incidents like this hurricane. And the same thing needs to happen in Louisiana. When you get the federal government involved, the process just slows down immensely. And you've got folks coming from Washington who, you know, have very good intentions, but quite frankly don't have a really good grasp of what's going on down here. And we all know that good intentions a lot of times do not get the job done.
Right. The road to hell is paved with good intentions. I know that saying. There's such a political ideology. I'm not just talking about among the people who run the government, but among a lot of people in the country today, that nothing that government does ever works. But that's not necessarily true, is it? I mean, you already said yourself, when the county took over, they did a much better job than the private industry did.
Yeah, a good example, in Jackson County, we formed what's called the Unified Command, where the four municipalities and the county met on a daily basis and eventually on a weekly and a biweekly basis, coming together to resort to how to fix this problem. And the whole idea is that wisdom is not found in one head, so let's put our heads together. And
right.
So government can help. But the good example, I'll give you a great example. FEMA showed up down here on our doorstep 9 days after the event. And when they showed up, they handed me a book, because I was the medical mental health branch director for the Unified Command, said, this is going to be the book that we're going to use to rebuild the Mississippi Gulf Coast, basically. And I said to them, I said, the book you're showing me was designed for 9/11, which is a local disaster. This mm-hmm. is a regional disaster of immense proportions. And I'm sorry, but that's not something we can utilize. We need your help, but that's not going to work. And one of the really good things that FEMA did was they actually hired local people in the counties that knew the people that really helped the process along. So, yeah, FEMA has made a number of mistakes, but they've corrected some of them by bringing in local folks and training them who know the terrain, who know the people down here.
But it's still taking so much time. I mean, and all this time, you know, you don't think about it, but all these people are still living in trailers, and I'm sure there's a lot of people who are homeless. And you know, a lot of people have just basically had their lives destroyed. These are, you know, not the richest people in the world. Mississippi is one of our poorest states, and a lot of these people didn't really have much more than just their homes and their jobs, and now for a lot of them, they're both gone. How are they coping with this?
Well, here's the problem. You bring a good point up. Many people on the Gulf Coast were living on the edge to begin with, getting
right.
by day to day. And you take in a storm that comes in and washes out, just in the three coastal counties, over 60,000 homes, I mean, completely gone. Major damage on homes around over 70,000, minor damage on I don't know how many more. But you take that and all the folks living on the edge, then it's going to take them a while to get back on their feet. And then another problem is our renters. I mean, that is a huge problem down here now. If you were renting property or renting a place, trying to get back into a place where you can rent, I was talking to a lady in Bay St. Louis who's renting a place, and I said, well, how's it going? And she said, well, I've got my name on three different places to rent, but on one of them, I'm number 300. So another problem we have here is finding affordable housing for people. That's a big problem.
Well, let me ask if you want to confirm or add to what Sarge was saying about the angry attitude, because when he calls up the show, you know, he gets really, really righteously angry about all this, and he says that there's a lot of that attitude down there. Do you think anything's going to seriously boil over, or is it just kind of like an under the sea level type of deal?
Well, I think that there is some indignation. I mean, I got a call yesterday from a lady that ate on me for about 10 minutes, and I just listened to her, and she was very frustrated because she couldn't get any help. And I was at another lady's house before then where a contractor had come in and put a new roof on her over her old roof. They didn't take the old shingles off. And not only that, we had in the same house, we had some well-intentioned faith-based folks that went in and put sheetrock up. They tore the old sheetrock down, But instead of taking the electrical wiring out, they put new sheetrock over it. So we got to take all that out again, and we got to take the new roof off. And so you do have folks that are very frustrated. They tend to be, you know, Mississippians tend to be very resilient. But, again, we're human beings like anybody else. We're in the 16th month after the incident, and folks are just tired, and they're worn out. And two good examples of that are, just read the obituaries in our two local papers down here, the Mississippi Press and the Sun Herald, and what you'll notice is the death rates. You just see more and more senior citizens that are, you know, just giving up hope. And that's probably the most tragic things, are folks giving up hope.
You mean committing suicide, or just dying because they don't have shelter and food and proper stuff?
I mean, they may be living in a FEMA trailer, or they may have had a life savings, and because they don't qualify because they were living in a flood zone, or because their insurance didn't cover them, which is another big issue down here, is the insurance companies. Some of them, not all of them, but some of them are. You've got somebody that's 65, 70, 75 years old, and they're losing hope because here they are, and they just see their life savings washed away. They know they're at the age, they don't have the physical necessities to do what's necessary to pick back up and rebuild their homes. So that's one problem. The suicide rate in our county, in Jackson County, has, if it's not doubled, it's almost doubled since last year. And we see that as an indirect cause of Katrina. We're not blaming Katrina on it, but again, once you have this kind of catastrophe happening in a community or in a local community down here, what you're going to have is you're going to have a number of things. What we've noticed is the suicide rate's almost doubled. Domestic violence has increased. Our youth drug use has increased. Crime has increased. Our arrest and incarcerations have increased. These are all indirect causes based on what's happened after Katrina. And the federal government's response is, we don't need somebody down here giving us a pep talk. We're way past pep talks. What we need are three things. Number one, we need money on the ground so we can go get the sheetrock and the shingles and the furniture that's necessary to put these people back in their homes. Number two, we need volunteers coming back down here again. We've got a volunteer center in Jackson County that can house them. And number three, we need in-kind donations like furniture or appliances or those sort of things, refrigerators, so we can put people back in their houses. That's the kind of stuff we can do that the federal government obviously cannot do or has not.
Okay, well, let's talk about that for a minute. Let's talk about the Jackson County Community Services Coalition. Now, did you form this? This was formed after Katrina, or was it something that was already existed?
It existed in 1997, and it was based on we had a number of kids in Jackson County that were abused or neglected. In fact, it was the highest rate in the whole state out of the 80 plus counties in Mississippi. It had the highest rate of abused or neglected kids. And so this was formed in 97 before I became a part of it. And then it was called the Jackson County Children's Coalition. And we have a number of programs. When I came on board in 2002, we started doing quite a bit of science-based drug prevention. We also oversee CASA, which has to do with abuse and neglect of children. But our primary mission with the Children's Coalition was to locate gaps in service. Well, when the storm hit last August of 29th, we ended up going in door to door, down on the beaches, helping folks. We got teenagers and volunteers, just helping people clean out their homes, bringing them food, supplies, medical supplies, whatever was needed. We weren't the only organization. A lot of organizations did that. Well, we've been doing it since the first week. Well, about 2 months ago, we changed our name from the Children's Coalition to the Community Coalition just because we broadened our scope of services.
Right.
So that's what this is our 10th year of being in, I'm not sure it's a lie, but being fully awake in the county. And so we not only serve Jackson County, but we've been over in Hancock County, which was actually where Katrina went, where it hit Waveland and passed Christiana. And I'll tell you something about hurricanes. The place you don't want to be when a hurricane hits, the two worst places are where it comes ashore and the northeast quadrant, because that's where the tornadoes and the high winds come in. And Harrison and Jackson County were located in the northeast quadrant. That's why these three counties, Hancock, Harrison, and Jackson, took the majority of the damage. And see, what happened to our friends over in Louisiana wasn't Hurricane Katrina. 12 hours after Katrina hit, the levees broke, and that was the
right.
critical incident. It was when those levees broke, and we all know what happened over there. It's just unbelievable.
Right. Well, you know, I remember the day after the storm, you know, talking about, wow, New Orleans seems to have, you know, survived it, because that's what everybody was talking about. And then, you know, when I heard the terms levees broke, and you know, I'd never been to New Orleans. The closest I've been to that area of the country is having lived in Atlanta. But I know something about the area, and I know that, you know, New Orleans is always kind of living on dangerous territory to begin with those levees. And when you hear that term, it just scared me. And then I saw what happened, and the response to it. I mean, you know, the sights of the people on the streets there in New Orleans, they didn't have as much of that for Mississippi, but I'm sure quite a bit of that was going on down there as well. Let me give the website to your organization real quick. It's jccsesc.org. It's a little tongue twister there. jccsc.org. And if anybody wants to make donations of furniture or of money or whatever they want to give, they can do so at that site. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
It's actually two agencies. We're one, the Jackson County Children's Community Service College, which is www.jccsc.org. There's also another one. It's called Mississippi Home Again. Had a lady, two ladies, one from Montana and one from New Hampshire. Let me just tell you, they're amazing. They got into the cookie and fudge brownies selling stuff, and they're down here, and they're bringing in appliances for people. And so we
You mean they moved down from Montana and New Hampshire, and they came down to Mississippi?
They did. In fact, they're sitting with me right now.
Wow, that's awesome. I'd like to talk to them, too, if that's possible.
Oh, well, they're right here. One is named Tammy and one is Annie, so I'll put them on. Here they are.
Hello.
Sure.
Hi,
how are you doing?
Very good, thank you.
Well, what made you guys come all the way down to Mississippi? Have you ever been down there before? Do you have family there? Or what made you decide to just come down there and help out?
We came down in October after the storm as Red Cross volunteers and drove through some of the most damaged neighborhoods. Feeding people. So we did that in October. That was our getting our feet wet, and after that, we just figured we could do some more, and we're doing a lot more right now.
I'm impressed. I mean, that's really touching that people would come so far. And, you know, I think about this, and, you know, I don't live the most luxurious life here. I just moved here to Chicago. I've had a rough couple of years, been unemployed and all that, but I'm very happy just to have a roof over my head and to have a job that at least allows me to pay the bills, and I can't imagine the suffering that's going down there. And part of me, you know, says maybe I ought to go down there, but I really don't know what the heck I could do if I go down there. But I'm really proud that you guys go down there and, you know, and really help out and do things.
Well, you know, that's actually a good thing for you to bring up, and our message actually would be to anybody who's like-minded, like what you just said, you'd really like to come down, but you don't know what to do. You don't need to know what to do. All you need to do is go to OperationTLC.org. That's a volunteer center in Jackson County, and we'll help you figure out what to do and help you make arrangements to get down here and hook you up with projects. We've got so many projects that we can't possibly do it without a tremendous amount of volunteers. So go to OperationTLC.org, and if as much as you can press that out there to your audience, let them know that website is a way to get down here and volunteer.
It's not too late to volunteer. A lot of people think they miss the rebuilding here. We need thousands and thousands of volunteers. So.
Well, OperationTLC.org. I don't know how loudly. Zach, are you guys hearing them clearly on your end? Because I'm hearing them pretty clearly, but I want to make sure everybody else out there. OperationTLC.org. Zach says yes. Okay. I'll be honest. I'll say I don't think I can make it down there myself, but I'll do everything I can on my end to lead people to the website and maybe get a few more people down there. Or maybe, you know, up here in Chicago, we have a lot of progressive history. Maybe I can organize some people into shipping some furniture or some money or some necessities down there to you guys.
That'd be super. That'd be great.
You know, America is a very, you know, I was telling Sarge the other day, I am the damnedest of damnable Yankees of them all. And, but I lived in the South for 12 years and I understand a lot about what's going on with his people. And I really, really feel for what's going on in Mississippi. I mean, the South has always traditionally been the poorest part of the United States. And,
I'm just for them. I'm not necessarily for the politics that goes on. Well, hell, it goes on everywhere in the country, but I am for them. And like I said, I'm going to do everything that I possibly can to help out, as limited as it might be. I mean, you know, I hope that getting on the radio show and getting whatever kind of publicity you're going to get out there helps out somewhat. It motivates some people to go down there who you know, are in better situations to do so. You guys are just doing some fantastic work down there, and I'm really proud, especially you come from such a long way. And Montana and New Hampshire are so different parts of the country. Did you ladies meet when you came down there, or did you know each other through the Red Cross beforehand?
No, we met. Our paths overlapped for about 2 days during Katrina, and we just found out we were like-minded sort of women that wanted to do more. So then I guess just, you know, life happened, and here we are. We actually have an organization ourselves called Mississippi Home Again, which is a nonprofit we started. Actually, People Magazine did an article about us about 4 or 5 months back around the Katrina anniversary. And anyway, we buy stoves, refrigerators, beds, and water heaters for folks like Jim was talking about. Once they're identified, we work very closely with Jim and the Community Coalition, and we identify folks, we help each other out, we pass names back and forth, and if he can't help them, we will. We can't help them, he does. And there's a handful of other organizations that we share cases with that get out there, roll up their sleeves, and get to work and actually buy the material, get it into people's houses without all this red tape. And so,
right.
And our organization, again, is called Mississippi Home Again, and you can check us out at MississippiHomeAgain.org.
MississippiHomeAgain.org. Got it. Can I ask what you ladies were doing for a living before you came down there? I hate to use the term homemakers, or did you have professional careers? What did you do before you went down to Mississippi?
I guess I bake cookies once in a while, but I'm a professional photographer.
Okay.
And I'm actually, my past is all in business. In my profile says I'm a serial entrepreneur, so business.
have you been taking a lot of photographs of the area? Are you planning on publishing a book of photographs, perhaps?
That might be after we help the people down here. That would be a secondary project, but sure, I have taken a lot of photographs and
okay.
Website.
See, it's important because I remember, you know, I'm an amateur historian, and I know what good the book, the Jacob Riis book, How the Other Half Lives, did. And I keep thinking about that and wondering, and the pictures that were taken of the Dust Bowl during the Great Depression. And, you know, that really helps out a lot to really show people, to give an idea of what's going on. And it's remarkable to me with the technology that we have that we haven't been seeing more pictures. Do you think people are just trying to forget about what's going on? I mean, Sarge keeps telling me that he goes to places, he went up to some Baptist church somewhere, and people just don't seem to want to talk about it or do anything about it. Are you finding a lot of problem with apathy?
Well, I got a comment from a person the other day about 180 miles north of our location, and he said to me this. He said, "I'm sick and tired of hearing about Katrina. When are you folks going to move on?" So that's one of the disconnects we have, is that when you ask people down here, because I've done about 60 debriefings since June the 1st, and we always open the debriefings up with one question, and the question is, when did Katrina end? And it's interesting, we always get the same answer, and we're talking hundreds of people that have been debriefed, and the answer is always the same. When you ask the question, when did Katrina end, the answer is, it hasn't. So for the folks on the Mississippi Gulf Coast, Katrina has not ended, even though most folks have moved on and there's been a disconnect even in the north part of our state and other places. And no blame there. I mean, people's lives are busy. We know that. That's just the way America is. It's a great country, but people have things they've got to do, and life moves on.
Right.
But for the folks right. down here, we're living in this new normal, which is in Katrinaville. You know, you got some folks that are back in their homes. A lot of folks are, but we still have a lot of people that are living in a FEMA trailer, and then they're still trying to get their house right next door to put back in so they can move in. You go on.
What about homeless people? Are you having a lot more problems with homeless people, and that's, you know, that the people who don't have trailers even?
Well, I had a fellow show up at my office the night before last, and he didn't have a place to stay, and I took him over to the Salvation Army shelter, and we had about, in Jackson County, I think we had about 60 people in that shelter. And I think if you go into Harrison County, the numbers are going to be a little bit higher. Hancock County, I'm not quite for sure, because Hancock is more of a rural area, and it's only, I think, about 20, 25,000 people live in Hancock County, which is actually good because of the storm, because it took a direct hit. So if we'd had a big population there, we'd have had our death toll would have been a lot higher.
What was your death toll, by the way? What was it? Because, again, very little of, because everything was focused on New Orleans early on, and very little attention has been given to the Gulf Coast. What kind of death toll did you have for the hurricane and the aftermath?
I think Joe was around in Mississippi. I think it was 250, 250, maybe 260, I think. It wouldn't quote me on that, but I think it was under 300. I was talking to a lady the other day that in Bay St. Louis, and she was telling me that 9 weeks after the storm, they found a body in their backyard. Still under debris. So we've still got places here where, not a lot, but we still have places where we're still removing debris. The Coast Guard's still pulling shrimp boats that are still washed ashore. We still got some of those. I mean, the cleanup is still ongoing. That's just how massive this thing was. That's hard to believe. And the government has come in at that level and really tried to take care of that. But, again, the problem is that by the time the folks just don't understand the red tape that's involved. And by the time you got the government trying to help the people down here on the ground, the process is just so slow and confusing. And now here we are 16 months later that, from my perspective, the folks that are going to make the difference down here on the Mississippi Gulf Coast and Louisiana is going to be small business and corporate America. It's not going to be our government. I love our government, but I'm just going to tell you, they're not equipped to handle something like this. And if they don't get it right, and I'm hoping they get it right, because the next time the wind blows or the next time the earth shakes, we're just going to end up wasting a ton of money, and we don't need to be doing that.
Well, also, I'll say this from my biased political point of view. I think it depends upon what government you're talking about, because when you have government that's run by people who don't even believe in the idea of government, this is what's going to happen. Obviously, there's some people who can get things done very quickly. The casinos seem to have gotten rebuilt very fast.
Isn't that interesting?
When Sarge, by the way, Sarge is online too, and we're going to try to get him on here in just a minute. One of the things that really angered me was him just saying how quickly the casinos were up, and in the meantime, you've got hospitals that still hadn't been worked on. And you know, private industry is private industry. They're there to make money. They're not interested in, you know, being beneficent. You know, maybe some to a certain extent, but that's not their purpose. When FEMA was run by, I forget the gentleman's name, after Hurricane Andrew, there was a big disaster, and President Clinton put in, a new guy to run FEMA. Things were much smoother. But once, you know, the current group got in, they just put in all their political pals, and I think that's the big cause of it. But, you know, again, that's me being politically biased. Mr. Yancey, I'm going to put Sarge here online, too, if that's okay, and he can join in the conversation. Is that all right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Hi, Sarge. How are you?
Oh, doing pretty good. Jim, good job, my friend.
Hey, Sarge. Thanks for plugging us. I appreciate it. Sarge, he is a 24/7. He's the guy that gets the word out, because a lot of folks don't realize what happened. In fact, Jackson County, the press called it, about 12 weeks after the storm, they called it the Forgotten County. We had 100,000 people homeless 5 days after the storm.
Wow.
100,000 people homeless. So I'm not, again, no blame there. Just, the storm was that immense. And obviously, New Orleans got a lot of press, and they needed to, because they've still got huge problems over there. But we still got big problems down here in Mississippi.
I hadn't met the two ladies that are there with you. Would you please pass on to them my thank yous and appreciation for what they're doing?
Well, you pass it on yourself, Sarge. Thank you very much for what you're doing.
Well, I'm just doing what I'm supposed to do, and I live here, so I've got a direct connection. My twin sister lives in Goshen, so I'm very closely tied to the community, but you ladies are not, and yet you've got enough American spirit and concern, humanitarian interest to actually be active. And I certainly salute you and thank you for it.
Well,
Well, you're very welcome. But, you know, the reason why we're doing this is for the people of Mississippi. That's what this is all about. And the people down here are phenomenal people. They've got a lot of character, like Jim said.
Yes, they do. In fact, I lived in Goshen for a number of years in Biloxi as well. And the people on the coast have always been among my favorite people. I thought about moving back down there, but after Katrina, I think I'll just stay here in Columbia.
Yeah,
well, have you had a lot of problem with people just leaving the area? I don't want to say problem like that, but have a lot of people just flat out left, gone with relatives elsewhere, or just decided to pack up roots and move elsewhere?
I mean, I think we've had some folks leave. We've had some professional folks leave that have lived on the coast, and they just say we're not going to rebuild again. I think, you know, what you find is a very tough spirit because of the hurricanes. People are just used to them, as used as you can be to hurricanes, I guess, like folks are out in California with earthquakes. But this is a tough one. I'll tell you, it's a tough one to crack because, again, we're not talking. I mean, usually we're back in operating order within a month after a storm. Maybe usually not that long. This is 16 months. And I say you can still come down here and find slabs. You can find over, I think, just under 8,000 FEMA trailers in Jackson County. Tammy and Annie live in a FEMA trailer themselves.
Well, we live on a friend's property that used to have a FEMA trailer.
Okay.
We live in a Katrina trailer, though. Our trailer that we live in had 4 feet of water.
Yeah, so we you know, when you think you've heard a story, that a lady's house in St. Martin, which is a little community not far from here, and she said, Jim, see those four houses behind me where those trailers are? She goes, yeah. I said, yeah. She said, those were four senior citizens. They died in the last 5 years. And she said, I can't blame that on Katrina, but she said, they just gave up and lost hope. So that's why I say, Joe, we don't have 4 or 5 or 6 years to rebuild, because every day that goes by is a day that I think we're going to lose somebody.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, we're certainly going to do everything we can on our end. Of course, everybody on the Head On Network is with you, from Guy James, Bob Kincaid, myself, Dr. Bill. We're all here for you, and we're going to do everything we possibly can.
Let me give Jim some news I just found out about. Dr. Mike Newcomb of Nova M Radio is planning on having, during the spring break, bringing a group down to Jackson County and the area to help do some of the work down there. I thought you might be interested to hear that.
Oh, that's great news. Lovely, lovely, lovely.
You know, Joe, I'd like to make a mention real quick. You know, we often find reasons to give big corporate America a little bit of dissent here and there, but I actually want to point out something that I think is pretty phenomenal, and that is a recent donation to Mississippi Home Again from BP, as in British Petroleum. They made a substantial contribution to our grassroots effort down here, and they support us. They support what the coalition's doing, this sort of organization. And because of them, we actually got a bunch of beds, believe it or not, in a senior citizen's home, even about 3 weeks ago, with senior citizens that were still sleeping on the floor. So corporate America is starting to look at this and starting to play a major role. We can't thank BP enough for that support.
Well, that's always good to hear. And, you know, I'm not, you know, death to corporations and all that. I certainly think they've got a lot more power than they deserve, but you know, that's always, you know, give or take here and there, that's always an argument that people are going to be having. I just think that there's a political ideology that just says government is always totally and completely incompetent, and private industry is always, you know, doing the right thing, and it's not always that case. I mean, if FEMA had been run by the right people, I think, you know, things would probably still be bad, but I don't think it would be as bad. I don't think you'd be dealing with the type of situation you'd be dealing with 16 months after the fact. However, you know, all due credit to the good people in Mississippi who are strong and gritting this out, and hopefully can be rebuilt. Because, you know, like I said, I'm all for you, and I'm with you as much as I can. I think what you guys are doing is just nothing short of remarkable. I mean, you've given up a huge chunk of your life to help out others, and I really can't think of a more more human
thing anybody could do. Just go out there and help our fellow humans in need.
I'm down. That for you. I'm down, baby.
Okay. Well, listen. I have to let you all go because we have to cut away for the news here in a couple of minutes. And I wanted to say how glad I was. Listen, I'm going to start to talk about this more. I'm going to talk about this regularly on the show. And of course, I know Sarge is going to keep on calling in as, you know, despite his protestations, I really enjoy his phone calls. I want to make sure that I'm, to let you know that I'm at least going to keep everybody aware of what's going on. And, who knows, maybe if something happens here with Head On, if we get something, I would love to make a trip down there myself and take a microphone and talk to some of the people down there. And in fact, if you want to go ahead and, because Sarge was starting to do that, and if you guys want to do that and just have people tell their stories, I'll gladly put them here on the show and we can have it running regular on Head On Network at some of the other shows. Right. And that would at least keep people aware of what's going on.
Good.
Fantastic. Okay. We'd love to do that.
Okay. Well, you all take care and just keep fighting, and we're going to be working to help you out. Okay.
Thank you, Joe.
Okay. Take care. Okay, Zach. I know it's a little bit. We got about a couple of minutes to go here. Let's just go ahead and start the second hour break if you so desire. I'll stop as soon as I hear the music. And I want to talk more about this issue. And it's real great to have them on the show. We went through two breaks there, but that's cool because this is important stuff, and everybody needs to know it. We'll be back with more with the second hour of the Cup of Joe Radio Show here on the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. Two more U.S. Marines and one soldier have reportedly been killed in Iraq in fighting west of Baghdad, raising to 54 the number of American forces who died in December, which is becoming one of the deadliest months of the war. Ceremonies later today at the Pentagon to say goodbye to Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld. He formally leaves office on Monday. The Army Chief of Staff is proposing an increase in the size of the Army and greater flexibility in the use of Army reserves. Iranians are going to the polls today to elect local councils. President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad is not on the ballot, but today's election is seen as a referendum on his presidency. A huge rally in Gaza today. Tens of thousands of Hamas turning out to support Palestinian Prime Minister Ismail Haniyeh following an assassination attempt on his convoy. Dozens were wounded in the clash, including one of Haniyeh's sons. Hamas blames Fatah for the attack. Meanwhile, the $35 million in cash that he was bringing back to Gaza, that money is nowhere to be found. Optimistic news from Washington, D.C., where South Dakota Senator Tim Johnson is recovering without complications from emergency surgery Wednesday night after suffering a brain hemorrhage. He remains in critical condition. A delegation of 10 U.S. lawmakers who favor the easing of sanctions against Cuba arrives in Havana today for a three-day visit. Meanwhile, U.S. Intelligence Chief John Negroponte is telling the Washington Post that everything he's seen indicates that Cuban President Fidel Castro may be dying. Blizzard conditions are continuing to hamper rescue efforts on Oregon's Mount Hood for three hikers missing since Sunday. A worsening major winter storm battering both Washington and Oregon, where millions are without power, streets are flooded. Extremely high winds have downed trees and forced the closure of floating bridges and several highways. New Jersey's legislature has approved same-sex unions, giving those couples the same rights and privileges as are available under state law to married people. Once signed into law, New Jersey joins Connecticut and Vermont, which also recognize civil unions among same-sex couples, and California, which allows domestic partnerships, which works similarly. This is the Quality News Network. A look at science and business news is up next. It's now 2.5 minutes past the hour.
Friday, December 15th, 8 o'clock. The Golden State Theater is proud to present two-time Grammy winner vocalist Diane Scherer. You've heard her perform with Dizzy Gillespie, Stan Getz, the Count Basie Orchestra, and Ray Charles. Now, don't miss Diane Scherer in a quintet setting Friday, December 15th, 8 o'clock. Diane Scherer has performed to sold-out audiences around the world. Diane possesses a 3.5-octave range and has been called the new First Lady of Jazz. The historic Golden State Theater is located at 417 Alvarado Street in downtown Monterey. Tickets for Diane Scherer and her quintet are just $29 and $39. For reservations, call 372-3800. The historic Golden State Theater proudly presents Diane Scherer and her quintet Friday, December 15th, 8 o'clock. 831-372-3800. And on the web, www.goldenstatetheater.com.
A successful spacewalk yesterday for two Discovery astronauts who were able to rewire half of the International Space Station. They'll attempt to do the other half in tomorrow's third and final spacewalk. Researchers report that U.S. breast cancer rates dropped 7% in 2003. That's 14,000 fewer cases, something being attributed to the fact that millions of women quit taking menopausal hormones that year following a federal study that linked the two. Lehman Brothers and Bear Stearns are both reporting record earnings. Lehman profits up $4 billion at 23%. Bear Stearns profits up 40% to $2.1 billion. The head of Morgan Stanley Investment Bank getting a Christmas bonus, $40 million in stock and options. But the Wall Street Journal says that as big as it is, it will likely be topped by some of his competitors. The head of Goldman Sachs, for example, will reportedly be getting a $50 million bonus. Consumer inflation unchanged in November following two consecutive months of 0.5% declines. Home Depot buying back $3 billion in stock with the proceeds from its recent $5 billion debt offering. Light sweet crude at $62.93 a barrel. That's up 42 cents. On Wall Street, the Dow Jones in record-setting territory, up 41 points at 12,458. The NASDAQ up 12, S&P 500 up 16. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Welcome back to the Cup of Joe Radio Show, the show that asks the all-important question.
Hey, you gonna eat that?
And now, back again for another hour of truth and fury. Here's the man your bosses hate, the voice of the working man's thinking man, Joe Vecchio.
Okay, and we're back here, and man, after hearing that, I'm glad I don't drink, because, you know, it's enough to drive you to drink listening to what's going on down there in Mississippi. And like I said, let me qualify this. I am, as they would call me, as they did call me when I was living down there in the South, I am a damn Yankee. But I am all for these people, because they are my fellow Americans and they are my fellow human beings. And it's important that we help them out from a situation that it was absolutely not their fault. And what I feel most for are the senior citizens, people who lost their life savings, people who worked hard all of their lives only to see it crushed by government indifference. And I really want to thank Mr. Yancey and to the two ladies. I think that's a remarkable story that they would come down from such vastly different environments. I mean, New Hampshire and Montana are about as far apart as you can get, to a certain extent. I mean, not just geographically, but although I don't know, to be perfectly honest, both the people of the West and the people of the Northeast, the original colonies, so to speak, they have a very independent, strong streak. And you know, the Southerners, what they are mostly, someone brought it up to me, and I agree with it wholeheartedly, are survivors. They have been, again, traditionally the poorest of poor states in this country. And if you look at the poverty rates overall, the southern states are generally where it's the worst. You know, lowest per capita income and things. I mean, I don't have the statistics here. I don't have the numbers. I may be completely 100% wrong in that, but I believe, you know, if someone has statistics to prove otherwise, then I'll tell me. But you know, the southern states are generally a lot poorer. And it really is a damn shame that help couldn't get there, you know, a lot sooner than it did. And just the fact that they're still digging out. That's what really irks me, that they're still digging out. And obviously there's some work that's going to take time one way or the other anyway, but, you know, get people's houses built. You know, do something better than just toss them in a trailer, for crying out loud. You know, yeah, you have the trailer, but, you know, do other things too, and really, you know. And like Sarge says, and like Mr. Yancey pointed out, there's still a lot of apathy, even from the people in northern Mississippi, people who were Mississippians. So, you know, and there's part of me that says, just go down there, Joe. Just go down there and volunteer. And as much as I'd like to, I do not have the economic wherewithal to just get up and leave like that. I mean, you know, I don't have much up here, but it's all I've got, and I just don't know, you know, how I could try to rebuild after losing so much time. I mean, they obviously couldn't pay me for my services down there, and I don't know if I could take a couple of years, because that's what if I was going to do it, I was going to take that much time. So I will do what I can while I'm here. And again, I'm not saying I live a life of luxury here. I mean, I'm you know, as bad off as I've been in the last couple of years or so, you know, losing my wife, you know, being unemployed for so long, having no money, living paycheck to paycheck, I know that I have it 10 times better than a lot of these poor people down there. And it really aches me that I can't just do more. So I'm doing what I can here. And again, you know, you don't always want to drag politics into something like this, but it is political. And a lot of what happened down there is the result of a political ideology that simply says government is totally incompetent. And when you have government that's run by people who don't believe in the idea of government, who think that position, that important positions of public trust are just, you know, nice little toys to hand out to your friends who did some campaign contributions, instead of basing it on, you know, who's the best person for a particular job. I mean, that's, you know, that's when things go wrong. Excuse me. And I'm going to make sure when I come home tonight, I really can't do it now because while I'm on the air, I can't really use the computer a lot because my memory sucks. My computer memory sucks. But I'm going to go and get more of those websites up there. And I urge any of you out there listening, if you have a blog or a website, JCCSC, I believe that was right. Let me double check that. JCCSC.org. Yeah, JCCSC, Jackson County Community Services Coalition, JCCSC.org. Also, Operation TLC. And what was that? Back home, Mississippi? I'll try to find it from the archives and get the right website. Tonight, when it gets on the archives, I'll listen in and get in there. Somebody talking to me? Hang on. Was there somebody on the line there? I thought I heard something. No? Okay. But Operation TLC is the main one, and then JCCSC. So if you can go there, if you've got some furniture or something that you want to donate, please do so. Because it's not just money that they need. It's physical objects. I mean, the money that will buy certain things. But if you have something that you want to, you know, send down there, or if you want to buy them some beds or some other items, just please do so. Please do so. Do everything you can to help out. They're Americans. They're human beings. And they need our help. And that's important. I'm glad to hear that Senator Johnson is doing better, to change his subject again. And, you know, and again, and I hate to bring politics into it, but I hope he pulls through, if for no other reason than to prevent the Republicans from regaining control of the Senate. And who was it that wrote that? Let's see. Where was it? Oh, yeah, it was Juan Cole. And, you know, he's talking about how the Republicans are trying to steal the November elections. And again, if Senator Tim Johnson passes away and he gets replaced by a Republican, and South Dakota has a Republican governor, so he would have every reason to appoint another Republican to this post, then control of the Senate reverts back to the Republicans. So technically, since we have, you know, Joe Lieberman there anyway, and he's, you know, Mr. Kissy Face with George Bush, and he got voted in mainly by Republicans, he has no incentive to really actually be a Democrat. So, and it's frustrating because, you know, and as I pointed out to the Sunshines and Lollipop people, the actual vote was much more in favor of the Democrats than the results were. Because, you know, and I've said this before, it's not Karl Rove's motive to win by huge landslides. He has, you know, 51%. He understands that principle. 51% of the vote is 100% of the power. And when they rig these machines, they rig them so that they get just enough to win. And what happened in this case is that a lot of moderates, a lot of people who were kind of sitting on the ledge, basically said, no, no. We're not voting Republican this time. We're voting for the Democrat. But because the cheating was there, the numbers weren't as big as they should have been. And a lot of people accused me of you know, being a quitter because I kept telling them about the election cheating that's going to be going on. It's like, you know, don't waste your vote, Joe. And it's like, it's not a question of wasting your vote. It's a question of being aware that they're cheating. And they did cheat. We just managed to overcome it this time. This time. And until we get the system fixed, it's going to happen again. And if you think they're not going to be ready for it in 2008, you're guess again. Guess again. They might decide to just cheat even more. So I can't imagine what would happen in this country if the Republicans had managed to hold on to the House and the Senate after, you know, being so far behind. And polls are telling us right now that any generic Democratic candidate has an 18-point edge over any generic Republican presidential candidate. So we'll see what happens. In the meantime, if you want to call in and talk about what our guests had to say, or anything else that's on your mind, you can give a call. The number is 1-877-443-2366. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. It's a Puffy Yummy Yummy break. I'm Joe Vecchio. We'll be back with more on the Cup of Joe Radio Show here on the Head On Radio Network.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be ye warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
We are taking to the streets, sidewalks, paths, and parks across Canada in support of ALS research and to raise money to provide quality care for the thousands of Canadians living with ALS and their families. Please join us. Walk for ALS is a fun, family-friendly event occurring in more than 60 communities across Canada. We are walking because ALS is a devastating disease. The average life expectancy is only 2 to 5 years.
We are walking because every day, 2 to 3 Canadians die from ALS.
We are walking to provide hope.
We are walking for those who can't. Most people with ALS will lose the use of their legs in the first 2 years of the disease. What would you do while you still could? For more information or to register for the Walk for ALS, visit www.als.ca/walkforALS.
Is the Head On Radio Network.
Okay, we're back here on the Cup of Joe radio show, and my microphone cord got stuck in something. There we go. I was just about to pull it up there, and it got stuck. It got stuck. Hey, Zach tells me my good friend Sarge is back on the line. He's got another comment. Hi, Sarge, what's up?
I wanted to give you a little update on the South Dakota senatorial situation.
Sure, fire away.
The senator is likely going to make a full recovery. He's going along really fine, and barring a setback, he should be able to move back into his position.
Let's just make sure he's not suicided, if you know what I mean.
Senator Joe Biden has had the same thing, and he's been declared completely well. And as far as the vacancy, if it were to occur, how it would work, and this is from South Dakota State Statute 12-11-4, and it's posted at unreportednews.net. You can just click on my name and you can read it for yourself, but I'll read a bit of it to you. If a vacancy occurs, it is the duty of the governor within 10 days of the occurrence to issue a proclamation setting the date of and calling for a special election to fill the vacancy. If either a primary or general election is to be held within 6 months, an election to fill a vacancy in the office of representative in the United States Congress shall be held in conjunction with that election. Otherwise, the election should be held not less than 80 days, not less than 80 nor more than 90 days after the vacancy occurs. The governor may fill by temporary appointment until a special election is held. Vacancies in the office of the United States Senate.
Okay, so he can appoint somebody if necessary, but there's a certain amount of time before there's an actual election. There has to be an election.
Yeah, the election has to be held within 80, not more than 90 days after the vacancy occurs. So.
Sarge, you're amazing. You did all this research. You did it what in like the last 5 minutes or so. Why don't you move up here to Chicago with us, and you can be like my research guy.
Well, Chicago's kind of cold, and I got this southern blood in my face, man. All right, I just wanted to pass that on. I thought you might be interested to know that.
Thank you, Sarge. And we're going to, of course, you know, we're going to get all these URLs, and like I said, I'm going to go back and listen to the archive and get right down the URLs because I didn't have a chance to type them down while I was talking.
Okay.
Or if you want to email them to me, just let me know whatever organizations, and I'll put them up on my site, and we'll get them up on the Head On Radio site, and we'll get them up wherever we can go, and we'll just do what we can to keep the word out, you know, because that's the important thing right now.
I tell you what, Jim told me that the one thing that has really meant a lot to him. Of course, you know, the money is very important. But he said one thing that is really rejuvenating him is that there have been emails sent to him, people saying, look, we wasn't aware of what was going on, and we're really interested, and thank you for letting us know. Please keep us updated. We're interested. And he said that has meant a lot because for so long it was the forgotten area. And, of course, you know, I've been trying to change that, and NOBM and Head On Radio Networks have been extremely wonderful about doing so. And every time the word gets out, it's probably saving a life.
I can't imagine. I absolutely cannot imagine what we would be doing without the internets right now, because if without them, there would be, you know, it really would be the forgotten county, because the professional media isn't saying anything about it. Hell, they barely said anything about it. You know, in the aftermath of Katrina, with all the focus on New Orleans, so I'm glad to be of help, and I'm glad we have the technology here,
you know,
to get the word out like this.
I'm thankful we have a man like Jim Yancey down there, because I have talked to Jim a lot, and he and I have become pretty good friends. And the man is just a real humanitarian, and his work down there, he really gets involved with it, and he really agonizes over a lot of this stuff. So you know, every time that he's on, you're talking about someone who's really sincere about what he's doing, and Jim's doing everything he can and then some. So every time he comes on, it's just you know, a wonderful thing, and I'm so thankful that you guys put him on.
Well, you know, I'm glad to have him on, and he's welcome to come on anytime he wants. If he just wants to, maybe we'll do like once or twice a week. We can just do a quick call, and he can just give us a brief update on what's going on. I certainly want to keep the news in the air. I don't just want to do, you know, a 45-minute interview and then, you know, okay, we move on, you know, to something else, and then the next day we don't talk about it at all. So yeah, well, you know, if he wants to do a little bit, come on, you know, for, you know, 5 or 10 minutes every show, and just talk about updates, and keep us aware.
I'll pass,
you know,
it on to him. Okay, I just wanted to pass that on to you. I thought you'd be interested to know. Oh, but listen, I'm going to tell you this story before I hang up, because I think
this
is something that really shows what he's facing. WLOX television is the major television station on the coast, and I talked to Dave Vincent, the station manager, and he really is a horse's behind. I asked him, and I knew the answer, of course, but I asked him, well, how's the Katrina recovery coming? Oh, it's coming along great. We're better off than what New Orleans is. And I just told him right then, I said, sir, you're a damn liar, because I know the story. And he had tried to say, well, where do you live? And I told him Columbia, and he said, Columbia where? And I said, Mississippi, just in Marion County. And he said, well, have you been down here? And I said, yes, I have. And he said, well, you need to come down here. I said, I have been down there, you know. And he was just really he's one of these that he's siding with the governor, and he's siding with the casinos, and he's not taking care of the people. He refused to investigate stories that I've passed on to him, like the housing project, where I was able to save a couple of housing projects, and he didn't even want to try and do the research on it, and I had to turn up doing it, and fortunately I was able to save them. but he's just a little Nazi. In fact, on his show, Tommy Richards on Good Morning South Mississippi got up on February the 24th and clicked his heels together and said, "Today is the day of the formation in of the Nazi Party in Germany." And he clicked his heels and gave a left-handed salute, Nazi salute, and started laughing about it. And he didn't even mention the horrors of how bad Hitler had inflicted damage on the people there, and how much damage he had done to us Americans, even, because we lost a lot of people fighting those Nazis.
Are you sitting there? Wait a minute. I want to get this straight. Are you saying that this guy literally did a Nazi salute?
Yes.
On the air?
Yes. If you go back and read my December 11th post at my blog, you will get the full story of it. But this guy is just. And they're owned I don't have it in my article, but I got Raycom, I believe it is, it owns that station. And if people will write Raycom, go read my article and write Raycom and write the FCC and write WLOX. I got a link to WLOX on the article, and let them know how offended you are by this, because this is atrocious. Now, he didn't do anything illegal, and that's the bad problem, but it was just extremely, extremely insensitive, and this Dave Vincent needs to get out of there. He's just
Can we get this? Is a copy of the video available? Maybe we can throw it on YouTube. I mean, that would certainly get the attention. Because sometimes,
I don't know if there is or not. I would have to check in on that. And of course, WLOX, after Mr. Benson and I had our little argument, I'm sure they're not going to cooperate with him. But I'll see what I can do about finding it.
If you can do that, email it to me. It's joe@cupjoe.com. Email me the video. And I have a YouTube account, for what it's worth. I mean, you don't pay for it or anything. I will post it up there myself with a comment, and I'll put it on my blog and show that, if you can get me that video.
Okay.
Because sometimes publicizing it is better than going to the authorities. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, every complaint that's written in to the FCC on them has to be filed in a folder and be made available for public viewing. So, when renewal time comes up, to write a letter, even though they may not take any action on it except to put it in the files, that has to be shown to the public.
Okay. Well,
we'll
see.
And, thank you so much, Joe. Appreciate what you're doing for us down here. And believe it or not, every time that someone puts us on the air, they're probably saving somebody's life. And
well, we hope we can do that, and we do what we can. All right, Sarge, thanks a lot. We've got the bottom of the hour here, and we'll take a break. Anybody else wants to call in and give their opinions on what's going on? The number is 1-877-443-2366, 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. We'll be back with the last half hour of the Cup of Joe radio show here in the Head-On Network.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability,
accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway insider. Someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the Inside Scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
At this moment, more than 800 million people are hungry. Millions more live in poverty. And you wonder, what can I do? Join the thousands of caring people who let Heifer International be their helping hands in the world. Right now, from Appalachia to Zimbabwe, Heifer is helping thousands of families become more self-reliant through the gifts of livestock and learning. Heifer provides farm animals that produce milk, eggs, and other products. That means milk to drink and products like cheese to sell. Having income means families can have better housing and health care, and their children can go to school. And recipients share their success, passing on the gift of their animal offspring to other families in need, ensuring dignity, self-reliance, and hope for the future. Find out how you can make a difference today at heifer.org. That's HEIFER.org.
You're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
Okay, and we're back here on the Cup of Joe Radio Show. And I want to thank again Sarge, and I want to thank Jim and the two ladies down there. If you want to give a call, you got half an hour to do so. 1-877-443-2366. Oh, this quick little news note. I like this. From NPR.org, a firm building the U.S.-Mexican border fence, our own little Berlin Wall, is busted for hiring illegal aliens. There you go. And what was that story out of Colorado just recently where they made a bunch of arrests claiming, well, at first they claimed it was immigration thing. Now they're trying to say it's an identity theft thing. And where was it that I read that, you know, a lot of these people aren't illegal immigrants, and they were basically going in there separating the brown skins from the white skins. I don't know if any of you recall this. Most of you were too young, no offense. And I barely remember it, too. I just remember seeing it in a documentary here and there. There was a lady in the 60s out in Kansas who was trying to explain to her children some of the problems that were going around with the civil rights movement, because there were not a lot of black people living in Kansas. I believe it was Kansas. There was not a lot of black people that went to her school, not a lot of black children, and she wanted to try to get the kids to understand prejudice and how it works. So what she did was she separated her students by brown eyes, whether they had brown eyes or blue eyes. No talk about whether they had gray eyes. I have no idea. Maybe it was blue eyes and everybody else, and, you know, I don't know. But what she did was she used the same kind of psychological warfare, if that's the right word, to explain how the race situation went. All the brown-eyed people, whenever they did something wrong, says, see, there's a brown eye.
You know, and of course the blue-eyed people were always praised constantly and were, you know, basically, you know, treated like a privileged elite. And almost immediately, you started seeing a change in behavior from how the kids acted. And then she switched up, you know, the week after where, you know, the blue eyes were treated badly and the brown eyes were treated well, blah, blah, blah. But it just goes to show how very easily we fall into these patterns, these tribal patterns of saying, oh, it's just these people. And all these people say, oh, those Mexicans or those black people. Or those, you know, in years before it was those Irish or those Italians. You know, I'm Sicilian, and I still get people who bug me about being in the mafia. I'm at a workplace, you know, if I'm working somewhere, say, you're in the mafia? You know, joking around, not being serious. And my answer is always the same. If I was in the mafia, I wouldn't be working here. You know? And if you knew that much about me, you wouldn't be working anyway. You know what I'm saying? But the point is, people get these stereotypes. Hang on a second. You know, I bitch and moan about Southerners, and a lot of that is prejudicial. And by prejudice, meaning exactly what the definition of prejudice is, prejudging. And I have a knee-jerk tendency, you know, to just say, ah, you're just a freaking redneck. And I feel bad when I get that way. Kathy always used to yell at me when I said that, you know, freaking redneck. Freaking is not the word I'm using. I know you what you're talking about. And she's right, of course. When you have that, you know, when you're prejudging people like that, but it goes on all over the place. And it's that prejudice that's leading to a lot of this immigration stuff. And you know, a lot of people, unfortunately, instead of blaming the people who set the policy, they're blaming the immigrants, the people who are just coming in trying to make a better life for themselves. Oh, how dare they do that? What do you mean, how dare they do that? You know, I have a very simple immigration policy. Let them all in. Yeah, and I know it's unrealistic. Yeah, I know it's naive. You know, all that stuff. I know. But you know what? Send me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. Those words speak volumes to me. Those words have great meaning to me. You know, I'm the grandson of immigrants. I never thought of myself that way until just recently. But I'm a second-generation American. My grandfather came here from Agrigento, my father's father. My mother's parents, I believe, also came here from Sicily. I'm not 100% sure. You know, my grandparents died like 20 years before I was even born. So, as far as I'm concerned, you know, I still have a very immigrant attitude about that sort of thing. And I'm like, look, let them all in. Let them all in. You bitch and moan about stuff. And you blame people who are powerless to make changes to the policy. What are you blaming the Mexicans for? What do they want? Well, they want to earn more money. And whether they send it back home to Mexico to a family down there, or whether they stay here and hang on to it, or whether they, you know, want to live in inexpensive housing and save money, you know, doesn't really, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I'm all well and good with that. Are they stealing jobs from real Americans? I don't see it that way. And I never have, and I never will. Because I think, as much as I'm pro-union, as much as I'm for-union, I think in the 40s and 50s and 60s, I think the American unions made a mistake by concentrating only on American workers. What we need in this world is a grassroots organization that's going to raise the quality of life for all working people. One of the reasons things are bad in this country is because they can outsource jobs now. And I hate even using these little catchphrases that come up. But when a company makes a decision to move to a place like Mexico or Vietnam or something based solely on the fact that they can get away with more, you know, deal with less regulation, pay their people less, because, you know, right now we live in, you know, we live in like shareholder society, where the shareholders only give a damn about the value of their shares. They don't give a damn about their impact on the environment. Excuse me, a little hiccup there. Their impact on the environment or the employees for the company. And you know, without the employees, the companies would make nothing.
If I had the power to do so, I would prove it. If I could get everybody in the country, everybody that works in non-essential jobs, okay, if you're a cop or a nurse or a doctor or something like that, it's a different story because those are necessary, to just walk off the job for 1 month, to say, we're not working for 1 month. It's a general strike. We'll see how long that lasts. We'll see how long their attitude towards working people lasts. But we don't have the courage to do that. As Paul Krugman said in his article in Rolling Stone, he said there is definitely a death of outrage as far as that's concerned. And where is the outrage? Because, you know, people should be outraged by this. We used to be outraged in this country by signs of luxurious wealth. I mean, in the Gilded Age, it was great and wonderful to have all these big mansions and stuff like that. But during the 40s and 50s and 60s and stuff, there were, you know, if you were overly showy with your wealth, people would look down on you. And, you know, to me, that's a good thing, because as well as government regulation, it's a way of keeping people's ambitions in check. I've got nothing wrong with people who have great ambition. I've got nothing wrong with people obviously wanting to make a better life for themselves. But when you start to do that at the expense of millions of other people, because what did they just mention in the news? You know, the guys retiring getting huge stock options for retirement benefits, getting more money than, you know, half of their damn employees make in a year. I mean, half of the employees combined make in a year. Excuse me. And we have, what is the term that Ross Perot used, that great sucking sound? And he was talking about jobs being sucked out to Mexico, which is happening. But the real great sucking sound is the money being sucked out of our pockets and into the pockets of the 0.5% or top 1%, 2% of the richest people in the country. And they always try to frame it in populist terms because they have to, because if we knew what they were really up to, or at least if enough people were informed, there would be a different story. It's not the estate tax, it's the death tax. Oh, they tax you even after you're dead. Well, you know, the truth is that you only start getting taxed after you're like a $1.6 million. So in other words, if my father were to pass away and if he were to leave me $500,000, you know how much money how much tax I would pay on that? I would pay zero. I would pay not one penny tax on that. If my father were to pass away and leave me $1 million, if he had $1 million, you know how much tax I would pay on that? Zero, not one penny. If he were to leave me $10 million, then I'd be paying taxes on that. And quite frankly, I think the estate tax should go up progressively. I don't know what the actual numbers are. But it's amazing to me how we talk about pulling yourself up by your own bootstraps, and yet we support all this stuff. Well, you know, you get your money the old-fashioned way. You inherit it. Right? Hey, it's your last chance to get in any action here. It's 1:45. We got the last 10 minutes or so. If you want to give a call and waste the last 10 minutes with me, you're perfectly welcome to do so. Number call is 1-877-443-2366. We're going to talk about maybe Hillary versus Obama, because that's been in the news in the blogosphere lately. Or whatever the hell else I'm going to dream up. We'll be back with more.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Head On Radio with Bob Kincaid.
When? Somebody tell me when the United States of America went from a can-do country to a can't-do country. Was can-do washed away in the fetid floods of Katrina? Was can-do killed in the stinking sands of Iraq? Did can-do get buried in the dank and gassy hole of Sago number one? Where did the Bush administration go when they took can-do out and killed it? What happened to a nation that never said we can't? What happened to that nation that knew that the only thing it had to fear was fear itself?
Well, Mr. Kincaid, we've replaced that slogan. Now all we have is fear.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on the Head On Radio Network.
Many dogs and cats spend endless days indoors staring at the wall, living for the moment when you will come home and tell them you love them, take them out, and make a fuss over them. Dogs and cats need physical exercise and mental stimulation, things to do and think about in order to be healthy and happy. Please, set time aside for them and give them a real life and real love. For more information, please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals at 757-622-PETA. Or helpinganimals.com. That's helpinganimals.com.
Homeland Security advisories are at the highest levels. If you have a disability or special need, you may have to take additional steps to protect yourself and your household in the event of an emergency. Contact your local Office of Emergency Management or Fire Department to find out about special assistance that may be available in your community. Go to www.floridadisaster.org for more information. This message has been brought to you by the Florida Division of Emergency Management, the Florida Broadcasters, and this radio station.
You're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
Okay, and we're back here for the last few minutes of the show. And let's just go right to the phones. We've got Ray on line one. Hey, Ray, how are you?
Oh, pretty good, Joe. Just thought I'd alert some people to this fact. I was going to Dennis Kucinich's website and accidentally put in www.kucinich.com and wound up at an anti-Kucinich website.
Oh, that sucks.
It looks official.
So why are you advertising them now?
Well, I'm telling you what's wrong with the wrong address. You don't put in the www, just put in Kucinich.com to get there.
Well, that's interesting. I always thought it automatically, like, defaulted to www when you did that.
Not really.
Well, you know, I'm a big fan of...
automatically default to it, in which case that's probably how I wound up there.
Hmm.
What you need to do is do http://, and then Kucinich.com.
Okay, I'll make a note of that. You know, I happened
this morning, and it said, you know, Nader supports Kucinich for tells Dems to vote for Kucinich. Then I read the article, and it says that way the Democrats will be so far to the left they'll be unviable. You know, it goes on and on. I also noticed they had links to Limbaugh and Hannity. I said, wait a minute, this can't be. And after reading the article, you know, I realized, hey, this is a fake. But, you know, people might not understand that.
I wish, you know, I sometimes call upon people who have the knowledge to do stuff. I wish we had hackers out there who could wreck this guy's website, you know. Just go in there and do something to make it not appear or something
like that.
I don't know.
If we all, you know, went to that website at once, we might crash it. And that, you know, but then they'll reboot and they'll be back up again.
Right.
But you'd have to do it over and over and over before they finally get the hint.
Well, we do. Well, we set up a robot to do something like that, and people say, "Well, isn't that very mean? Isn't that very mean, Joe? Isn't you?" Well, you know, I'm damn mean. What can I say? And I'm militant. And you know, I say this, and I was talking to Bob Kincaid about this the other day, because he had Dennis Kucinich on his show.
Yeah, I know.
A little while ago, and I was saying, you know, I supported Governor Dean in the 2004 primaries, but I liked Kucinich. And the reason why I didn't support Kucinich had nothing to do with, oh, he's way too far left, but with the fact that, you know, he's as a congressman, he has less direct experience.
Yeah.
So I just thought, you know, I think maybe he'll make me, you know, maybe, yeah, maybe I'd like him as a vice president candidate at this point. But we'll see. You know, we still got a long way to go. And, you know, I was mentioning, because if you read BartCop.com, and BartCop was one of the first political sites I started to read seriously, he's big on Hillary right now, and you have other people who are big on Barack Obama, and, you know, there's kind of a big fight going on between who's going to be what. And how do you feel about that? Do you like either Hillary or Obama, or are you a strong Kucinich person?
Well, I like Obama. Hillary, I don't really care for that much. For one thing, the Democrats are going to have their convention first. And, you know, the Republicans say, well, you know, we'll put up Condi. Well, that's until they have Hillary up, and then they'll pull somebody else that's probably going to get more votes than Condi would. You know, I'm basing that on the fact that, you know, we're probably not going to have a chance real soon to have a strong female candidate, you know, in both parties to run against each other.
Well, let me ask this: if Hillary becomes a Democratic
female, you know,
right? Well, if Hillary becomes the Democratic nominee, would you vote for her in the election?
It depends on who, you know, the Republican is. I may decide to go green. You know, knowing
who?
It wouldn't matter either way.
Who do you think the Republicans are going to pick? I mean, who do you think they want to pick, and who do you think they're going to wind up with?
McCain.
Yeah, that's what I keep thinking. They're going to try to foist this guy on us.
Yeah.
And you know what? We were talking about this, and Digby has been talking about this. Is McCain has been screaming bloody murder. We need to get 20 or 30,000 more troops there. And Digby says that he's only saying that because he knows it'll never happen. And that way, when he runs for office, he can say, well, if you had done what I said, that we would have won the war by now.
Woulda, coulda, shoulda. It's all smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, but, you know, the scary thing is now that, you know, somebody might actually take him up on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if that happens, then, you know, because, you know, 40 or 50,000 people, like apparently George Bush was talking about today, is not going to make a difference. You need like 500,000 troops down there in order to really stabilize that country.
Overnight.
Yeah, and exactly. Yeah, they just don't have it.
As long as they're holding off, you know, that's the chance that more and more people are going to die. But,
well, you know, Bush says we can wait.
Like Albright says, it's worth it. Of course, she was talking about somebody else's nation losing people. You know, but if you want to fight a war, you gotta realize you're gonna lose people. I'm sorry, but that's the fact.
But correct me if I'm wrong. How many American soldiers died in Bosnia? I think the number is zero.
I don't know if you're right or wrong, because you didn't tell me a number.
I think the number is zero.
Yeah.
In fact, I believe that. Everybody that Bill Clinton sent into combat, nobody died.
That's correct.
You know, so, and how many people have been lost in Iraq? How many, you know, American soldiers?
2,967, I think, is the last count.
And this last month has been the deadliest. So what were the right wingers saying?
The ones that died actually on the ground in Iraq. That's not considering anybody that was medevaced out to another hospital.
Right. And that's not even the number of wounded as well.
Correct.
And, you know, and how many Iraqis have died? You know, the one report said about 655,000.
Plus.
And, of course, the millions who have just left the country because, you know, they can't live there anymore.
And the million that died because we weren't supporting them. We didn't send, you know, we were sanctioning them. And if anybody had a reason to bomb the World Trade Center, that would have been enough reason. Plenty enough. You know, I'm against it. But I'm just saying, if anybody had the right based on, you know, what we've, I mean, we're looking at 217 people in Iraq for every person that died in the Washington, in the Trade Center, the World Trade Center.
Right.
You know, that's not,
and Iraq had nothing to do with it, and that's just the thing.
Nothing to do with it.
And, you know, the place that we invaded that a lot of us even did support, even me to a certain extent, in Afghanistan, and we're losing Afghanistan.
Yeah. But, I mean, we're not, I mean, if you want to say we're better, let the CIA take them out. You know, mano a mano. You know, don't just wipe out the whole nation saying it's worth it. It's justified. It's not.
And, you know, it's funny, people talking about bombing Afghanistan into the Stone Age, they were pretty much already there to begin with.
Yeah.
And then they let Osama get away, and you wonder if it has to do with the Bush's family connections. And, I mean, that's the scary part. I mean, you think about stuff like that, and it's like, maybe it's true.
Osama had anything to do with it. The FBI doesn't have him on the want list for the World Trade Center. They said they can't connect him.
Of course, he claimed the credit for it, but that doesn't necessarily mean he did it. And I still get people, I argue with people who say that there was explosive charges in the World Trade Center, and, you know, remote controlled airplanes, and
it looks,
and I'm like,
it's possible.
Yeah, maybe, but, you know, it would take the planning on that. I mean, when you're talking about charges in the World Trade Center, I mean, the plane would have to hit just at the right floor, and I can't imagine if those guys were that good at planning and executing this that they'd be so screwed up later on. You know what I mean? And quite frankly, there's plenty of stuff to convict them for after the fact. You know, I mean, whether that
they weren't even trained enough to make those turns they were making in those aircraft.
Right.
You know, I mean,
well,
there's a lot of room for doubt.
But even so, the stuff that they did afterwards is certainly enough to put them in jail for the rest of their lives on war crimes. You know, even if they had nothing. I mean, personally, I still go with the fact that they were just a bunch of incompetent jerks who either intentionally allowed it to happen without knowing how big it was going to be,
who all was in those planes that flew out during the no-fly time zone? You know, during that time, maybe they were the guys that were supposed to be on the flight. The remote flights, you know. I mean, that's a possibility. We don't know who they were.
But, you know, and again, this is, you know, I hear all this, and I'm like, well,
theory.
Yeah.
It's all theory, and it's a theory of conspiracy, but that doesn't mean it's wrong.
Yeah, but again, let's just put the horse before the cart. You know, get the sons of bitches out of office first, and let's see if they pulled an Operation Northwoods on us, then we can find out later. And it's just a little icing on the cake.
Only if that information is going to be available later.
Yeah, knowing these guys, it won't.
It could be, you know, members of Skull and Bones and sworn not to tell anything. Yeah, who knows.
Well, you know, and again, I'm not saying I don't think that anything happened. Well, I'm very skeptical that they were capable of pulling anything that big off. Listen, Ray, we're coming to the end of the show here, so and normally I wouldn't mind just keeping on talking about this, but so listen, let me let you go, and because we got to wrap up here.
Okay.
I will be back on Monday.
Okay.
Thanks for calling. Okay.
Okay, Joe.
All right, bye-bye. All right, let me wrap this up. I want to thank Zach for producing the show today. I want to thank Bob and Agnes Kincaid out there in West Virginia producing the show, producing all the wonderful shows on the Head On Radio Network. And we have a lot of great entertainment and a lot of great talk shows here. I want to thank Ben Birch and the White Rose Society for hosting my archives. And, yes, I have started podcasting them again. So tonight on the show, when I get home from work, I will put a link up on cupofjoe.blogspot.com. The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine is coming up next, and I understand that it's a rerun, but that's okay. Listen, because everything Mark has to say is good, and you can always hear it again. Until then, I will be back on Monday. You all have a good weekend, and hey, get back to work. The cream of steam. How many more does that leave? Give me a pot of...
...in the U.S. The U.S. Mint will launch newly designed $1 coins next year. The gold coins will have different presidents appearing every 3 months. The public will have the chance to decide which design they like best. When the chief executive of KB Home stepped down last week because of a stock option controversy, he agreed to give up the amount of the disputed gains, $13 million. However, since he retired as opposed to being fired, he will still get $175 million in benefits. Light sweet crude is trading at $58.91 a barrel, and near the close of Wall Street today, the Dow is down 25 points, NASDAQ up 7, and the S&P 500 flat. There's always more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
This is a top to, you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11,
oh,
11,
and most of
11, and
amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes, you know, be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to
11. 11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Night Shift, where the children of the night fight the radical right. It's Foxed Up with John Fox.